Welcome to episode 116 of Whiskey, Wine, and Moonshine. I am one of your hostesses, Miss Smart, or Miss Think Pretty Smart. And with me, I have Lady Buddha. And in spirit, we have Sojourner Verdad, whose voice you won't hear tonight. How you doing, Lady Buddha?
I'm good. I'm great, actually. I'm sleeping. All those things. I'm glad. First of all, the sun is out. It's been raining for days and days here in the metro Atlanta area. So it was raining all day while I was at work, actually. And I had to keep, I had to do a lot of walking. I was visiting a school that was a former college campus. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going from one place to another, I had to be outside, and it was drizzly and rainy and gray all day. But then at the end of the day, I came outside and it was like perfect weather. In fact, I was overdressed. That, you know, fishnets and a sweater dress was too much.
Oh gosh, fishnets. What a winner. Because I'm literally thinking of you in fishnets, scooting around, sashaying around.
Yes, I got, you know, several students were like, "Wow, you look nice today, little boys, little girls." This one girl was enamored with me, and I sat in the back of her classroom. She kept coming up to me, complimenting me. "You're so pretty. I love your hair. I really like your outfit." She was just going down the list.
Aww, you should take her up and become a mentor.
Well, I did think about it. Mm-hmm. I really did think about it. Anyway, she was a ninth grader. Uh-huh. Yeah, she made me, I'm like, let me go to one of these schools and see. Because I actually won't be visiting that particular school again in the future. But she did make me think about it. So,
mm-hmm. Look at you out there being a good influence on the kids.
I know. Wow. Oh, no. Mama, I made it.
Yeah, we actually had a similar day here today. Like, it was crazy rain. And where I work, well, first of all, I left the house when it was dark, and I realized today I can't live that way. And I know the time changes next weekend or this coming weekend.
Yes,
I haven't had to leave I haven't worked literally from kink to kink, from you can't see in the morning to you can't see at night. It's dark both times. Mm-hmm. I haven't done that in like 6 or 7 years. So you can imagine that my spirit was weary when I realized that it was still dark outside and I was leaving my house.
Yes. Well, that's the thing, because I had to drive. You know, I told y'all one day I had to leave my house at 5:30 a.m. to get somewhere to work. Mm-hmm. Today was 6:30 a.m., which is only a little bit better.
Oh, I mean, we really got to work on this getting independently wealthy hustle, because mm-hmm. I don't know that I can. It's not even a want. I don't know that I physically can live this life for X amount of more years. I don't even know whose idea this was, particularly since technology is so great now. My job, for the most part, I don't need to be there.
Right.
So right. Why am I there? And why are they wasting office space on me being there?
Girl. Well,
yeah. But as I was saying before, though, it was very rainy here. Where my office building is, there are like a few restaurants. It's a new area, but we have food trucks. You know, for lunch. And because I have not, I'm just lazy and I haven't cooked lunch food this week or got any lunch food, I had to go to a food truck. And I ended up standing out there in the rain. So, of course, I got mud everywhere. All my pants are made for heels, but I walked out with my driving shoes on. So you can imagine.
No.
Yes, exactly. So it's just been a hellish day. My UPS people still refuse to deliver my stuff to my house.
Stop.
Yes, even though I spoke to the supervisor today and she sent an actual direct text to this person to put the freaking packages at my door. I also had a FedEx package that's an Amazon purchase as well that they had lost. And so Amazon refunded my money. And on the the FedEx site, I had originally, when I thought it was going to come on time, I originally said for them also to leave it at my door. What do? I come home to what? A FedEx sticker on my door. Because fuck my wishes. And here we are. As I said earlier, Sojourner of her dad, or Sojo, is not with us in voice this evening. She is actually off fighting crime and
kissing. I was gonna say, she's partying, I bet.
I'm sure, because that's
your Wonder Woman or Superwoman outfit together.
Exactly. So you guys have us, Lady Buddha and I, here today, and you will deal. I don't know that we have any 5-star reviews to read to you guys right now, but if you are listening to this and you have listened to it, please, please, please go to iTunes or Stitcher and leave us a 5-star review. We would very much appreciate it. And if you leave us a 5-star review that we actually like and that is sincerely complimentary, we will read it on the show and we will make you e-famous. So who doesn't want to be e-famous?
Exactly.
Right. If you have any questions or comments that you'd like to send to us, you can always reach us on Twitter, Whiskey Wine Moon, or at our website, whiskeywineandmoonshine.com, or basically if you Google Whiskey Wine and Moonshine, you will find us. If you're listening to this and you're wondering what we look like, you can always go to our YouTube channel and look at some of our earlier shows, because we used to actually be on screen, but then we got lazy. So now here we are, just audio.
You know, we do have a 5-star review on iTunes.
Oh, we do.
Yeah, it just popped in yesterday, actually.
Excellent. Okay. Well, ignore what I just said, y'all.
No ignoring. Go ahead and, write us in. But this one is from Mudro, who has written us before. And 5 stars, it says, "Hey, booze, I love hearing y'all perspective on all issues and topics. You ladies are a beacon of hope and trillness." Keep it the ratchet, Dro.
Okay, thank you very much to Mudro. And anyone else who's interested in doing that, please feel free to step up. Also, feel free to share this with your friends and family. We had a big jump in listenership. Was it episode 113 or 114? And if
you know which one it was, but yeah, one of those two.
Right. So I think it was the one about the gamma men or beta men. Mm-hmm. If you are somehow responsible for it was more than triple listenership on that show, let us know, because we can't figure out what happened or where all these listens are coming from. We appreciate them, but we just would like to know, you know, for research purposes, where it's coming from. It can't possibly be a bunch of trolls, because if it were trolls, they would send us hate mail.
Yes, so, or hate tweets, because Lord knows they are quick to get on a keyboard somewhere.
Exactly, hate tweets. So I guess we'll get into some... Oh, wait, are you drinking anything?
No, I just finished drinking a green smoothie, but right now I'm just drinking some water. What about you?
I'm actually drinking what is essentially Kool-Aid in my house, the Bassignani Riesling. I haven't drank really or had any desire to drink in a long time. Mm-hmm. And so yesterday we were supposed to, you know, do the show, and I had a glass of wine. And then today, with all the rain and, you know, the delivery's not working out and just the whole whatever, you know, I was actually pleasantly pleased to know that I had cold wine in my refrigerator to greet me when I came home. So, congratulations. I'm off the wagon. Yeah, thank you. I'm off the wagon. So, or wait, am I on the wagon? Yeah, I'm off the wagon, because off the wagon is drinking, right?
I don't know. I'm not for sure. But, you know, I just remembered I wanted to give a shout out to a couple of people who've been tweeting us throughout the week, including, what is her hashtag? A sarcastic nerd. Mm-hmm. And she wrote, was it today? Yeah. Or really was midnight, but she said, "I see why the ladies of Whiskey Wine Moon think Mary Jane is a sociopath, ... because she is." So I still haven't seen it. I know that you all are about to do kick off our review season. I think sometime really soon with Lady Rowe. Yes, but yeah. I am going to watch, so I have to catch up. So I guess I'll have 3 episodes to watch whenever I get in front of a television.
Well, I haven't seen yesterday's episode because I went to sleep shortly after we ended our not show.
Well, she intrigued me with that one. I was like, well, I need to go check to see what just happened.
Well, I'm thinking maybe they're gonna make a conscious effort to step up their writing because the competition has.
Mm-hmm.
All the other shows, I mean, there are some really good shows out there. And I think for the first couple of seasons with Mary Jane, they really appealed to the lowest common denominator.
Hmm.
You know, so I think they're trying to maybe add more nuance and make it so that I don't want to see bad things happen to her, you know, but we'll see.
We'll see. So one of these days I'll join in with y'all though.
Yes. Get on top of it. So yeah, I guess we'll go ahead and get into it. I'm sure we've already talked about in our WhatsApp the video of the young lady and the young girl.
Yeah, the girl
being assaulted. I am actually pleasantly surprised. I'm pleased that we have not seen that baby's name.
Yep, we still don't know her name.
Yes, which is excellent. None of her classmates have said her name. Nope. Which is excellent because aside from the fact that she was assaulted, you know, I can't imagine her level of just basic humiliation. If her name is out and every time someone goes to Google her, that video comes up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so as you guys probably, as everybody who's listening to this probably knows, the officer has been fired. But to me, that just isn't good enough. I feel like he needs to be arrested. And no matter what happened before the tape started rolling, he had absolutely no reason to assault a girl child when he is a bodybuilder.
It's crazy. I'm still seeing people respond, certain people in particular respond on Twitter, but you know, with the why are y'all standing up for this girl who was misbehaving, as though perfect behavior is the bar for civil rights. It isn't.
Right.
Nobody has the right to just body slam you and flip you out of a chair, you know, and regardless of what happened before we saw the tape, the part that we saw, she was still sitting in a desk. Therefore, there was no imminent threat or danger to the police officer that would cause him to feel like he needed to flip her upside down, body slam her, and drag her across a room.
Right. It was a display of power that had no place in a school. And now today we've learned not only has he been fired, but that the girl was, you know, recently orphaned and in foster care. And it struck me as, now I had heard the kids saying or read places where the other classmates said the girl was new.
Right. I heard that.
It digs into my spirit that teacher, that staff didn't know her circumstances. And I know it's documented somewhere because they had to call an adult to come, you know, to come and get her. Somebody somewhere had to enroll this child. And in the student information system, at least the ones that I have seen, and I've seen a good number of them, they have the person who's the child's guardian, how that person is legally responsible for them.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew, and the teachers can see that information because a teacher may have to call home for anything, any manner of things. Mm-hmm. So this is a teacher who did not take into account. It's just a failure on so many levels for that girl and the rest of the class.
Well, that was the thing that got me when I, first of all, I refused to watch it for a while. And it wasn't until probably, I don't know, the 8th or 9th time I was presented with it that I was like, okay, let me just check it out. And, you know, I was horrified. But then I was like, first of all, whoever that person there who was standing in the video, I've heard different versions as to whether or not that was the teacher or whether that was the administrator that the teacher called. But to the best of my understanding, there were a total of 3 men in the room. And my question always went back to, why was the first person called for help? Why did the teacher feel like this was something that needed to be escalated to the point where she needed to be removed in class in the first place? Now, I wasn't there. I have not done due diligence on my research. So my understanding is that she was on the phone, on her phone, and not participating in class. Now, having been in education for 16 years and observing all kinds of teachers, all kinds of classrooms, all kinds of environments, you know, in the hallways, in the building, whatever, there, I just don't see any reason why anybody with any sense of classroom management would feel like they need to disrupt instruction to engage in a power struggle, which means you're already losing, to remove somebody who isn't actually being disruptive. They're just not doing what you want them to do.
Yep, exactly. It was, yeah, and that's why I say, you know, the entire class was victimized, because I don't think the victimization starts here. Because if you're in a class or you're being taught by that type of person,
right,
they probably, you know, missed some areas or are weak in other areas, yep, you know, as well. I mean, as you know, we both been in education, you know, I can say, and I told a friend this today, that when I was a teacher, there were things that I did day one, so to set a tone in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't set that tone in the classroom, like, I very rarely had anybody, you know, get out of hand with me. And when they actually did, the children actually stepped in and was like, no, chill.
Exactly.
You know? So there's something that didn't happen there to set that tone in that classroom. And I feel like it's this thing that stay with me here. When I first started teaching, I wasn't assigned to my classroom until like a week and a half after school started. I was taking over for someone who had decided to retire. Mm. Looking back, she probably was forced to retire. But at any rate, she told me, these kids will never read a book.
Mm.
Now, if you already have in your mind that you're working at the rough school, these kids ain't gonna ever be shit. These kids ain't gonna, you know, read no books. These kids ain't gonna do whatever. These kids are all gang members. Then, of course, your first inclination is to call the people.
I'm about to say, just treat them like that.
Mm-hmm. Treat them like they're already criminals.
Right. Yep. That's exactly right.
It was. It really, really was disgusting. I am proud of the child or children who videotaped it and put the videos out. But I'm also disgusted at the fact that these kids are saying this officer was known for this. Alumni are saying that this officer was known for this.
Mm-hmm.
He's still there. That this officer that arrested the girl who stood up, that girl was 18 years old, which means she's an adult. Mm-hmm. So he, on his whim, has the power to ruin her damn life.
The one who, Naya Kenny?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that video of her where, you know, she just said she couldn't believe it. She was just in disbelief, you know, and just, you know, I've never seen anything like that. And she was just like, no way. You can't do that, you know, to a little girl. That just wasn't right.
Yeah. It wasn't right. And, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, the other kids in the classroom, they may have, you know, been used to this. Whether they're used to it or not, doesn't matter, because it's really not their place to stop this.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also seen in other videos, when they do try to stop it, they get guns pulled on them.
Wow. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they looked horrified. And whoever that adult was, I'm like, this is on you for calling him in there, for escalating it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then it's on him because he had the police officer Fields, because it was just no reason. None at all.
But I think it was in our group today in WhatsApp where I liken this to serial killers. Mm-hmm. Serial killers are allowed to roam free because they typically prey on people nobody cares about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens here, because even if those kids are going home telling their parents that this officer or officers or teachers or whatever are doing these things, and the parents may even be complaining and organizing everything, the district, they don't care. They couldn't possibly care, because this man had a trial start.
He had a job.
he had a job, but he had a job start. I mean, a trial starting in January.
Yep. I mean, you know, I kind of tweeted about this just a little bit because, again, just having been in different situations, I've seen some resource officers who really blended in and weren't there to show that they were, quote unquote, the most powerful person in the building. Mm-hmm. But then I've been in other buildings where their whole purpose was just to bark at kids. Mm-hmm. You know, and people try to act like it's, well, these kids in that particular neighborhood or whatever, but it'll be in the same district right down the street. Mm-hmm. And in this building, this is the culture that we've established where we want to treat you this way. And in that building, we remember that you are somebody's child, you're still a human, and that, you know, people who are really going above and beyond are the exceptions and not the rule. And we don't need to bark at you every 5 seconds and yell at you to go down the hall and carry on. So it's kind of amazing. I actually had a conversation about this with the teacher that I was visiting today, who, by the way, before his lesson, he brought up that video. He mm-hmm. talked about it because it was actually a connection to what the students were reading. And, you know, he gave his opinion or whatnot, but it turns out that he had worked in another school that I used to have to visit. And we were just talking about the fact that the demographics in this building and in that building are almost exactly the same, but that the energy, the vibe, the environment in the building is completely different. And part of that is because of the leadership. Mm-hmm. The principal at the other building kind of let things be this uncomfortable, loud, boisterous, you know, mean, unhealthy place. Whereas on this campus, you know, like I told you, the kids were complimenting me. I stopped a boy who I could tell that if, you know, somebody wasn't comfortable with black boys, they may have decided that he looked scary. Uh-huh. But I stopped him to ask for directions, and he had his earplugs in, and he took them out, and his hair is all wild, and these new box curls that they do now. And he's like, oh, you need the main entrance? Oh, okay. Well, ma'am, and he goes into ma'am and starts pointing and, you know, pants sagging the whole nine. But, you know, that's not a reflection on his character.
Right. Yeah. So,
you know, he was just a regular teenage boy, being a teenage boy, looking like a teenage boy, but still helpful, you know, decent human being. I feel like that's how most kids are, mm-hmm. You know, and they will respond if treated that way.
This reminds me of a situation where I was in a vice principal's office, and, you know, I've never witnessed like an all out brawl at a school, but I have been in offices where the kids are brought in. And what struck me was this child came in and he had gotten into it with another student. So one of the kids went one room and the other came to the vice principal where I was. Vice principal's black man. And he just talk to the boy and ask exactly what happened. He's like, you know, I know I'm gonna get suspended. I know, blah, blah, blah. And you know, you can't call my grandma, blah, blah, blah. And the man said, this is not last year. And started talking to him about what they could have done to, what the boy who was in that office could have done to de-escalate the situation. Where exactly did it go wrong? And he wasn't accusatory. He wasn't, you little nigga, you ain't gonna never be shit. But it was very loving.
Nice. See, that's my favorite word, right? Love.
It was very loving. Mm-hmm. And so if you, and another thing I'll say is, you know, being in offices, I see parents, particularly black fathers, coming to school. Mm-hmm. And they are 9.9 times out of 10. Also very loving and mm-hmm. concerned. And it's something that you see even from the administrative assistant in the office, mm-hmm. you know, the kids coming up, giving her a hug, you know, and just the way, you know, he or she talks to them. One of the schools that I've gone to, they, their attendance counselor is a young black guy. And same thing. He exudes, I expect the best from you. I want the best from you. And mm-hmm. I know you could be the best.
And I know you can be the best.
Yes, without saying you got to be twice as good as white folks. They don't have that, you know.
I love that you always bring it back around to that.
Because that's bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, but that belief. So that's the thing that frustrates me when I, you know, meet with people who don't start there, who start with these kids, which for people who don't know, when that's shorthand for when they say, well, these kids ain't shit. That's really the rest of what they're thinking. But yeah. when they start off that way, that's really what's coming next. And I'm just like, you know, you're starting from the wrong place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they, I think often people are allowed to start at the wrong place. Like you said, with the upper, with the administration, mm-hmm. a lot of the positive starts with the administration, because if an administrator sees that a teacher like this one in the video has poor classroom management skills, mm-hmm. takes things personally, is quick to escalate, that teacher yeah. don't need to be there.
He does
and
not.
An administrator, department chair, department head, they have to see that and be willing to think, or have the mind to think, this is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wouldn't, you know, people, it's so funny. People will not park their car in certain places, but will, you know, think treating a human being is okay. You know, mm-hmm. treating a human being poorly is okay, but they won't park their car where the lines are where the spaces are too small. That's more important.
Well,
that's a great analogy, but whatever, it's what y'all get.
So.
Mm. Let's see, what else is going on?
Well, I have a question. It's kind of a general question. It's not related to what we were talking about, but the question is, how do you know when it's time to move on from something? So this can be a relationship with another person. It could be a friendship. It could be a job. You know, whatever the situation is, how do you know when you're done with it, it's time to move on?
For me, when the time that I spend like with the person or doing the thing, when there's more time where I'm not happy about it or fulfilled mm-hmm. with it, or even content, like mm-hmm. for me, if I use just relationships, if 4 out of the 7 days I don't really fuck with him, then yeah, it's probably time to move on. If on a Sunday night, my stomach starts hurting, I start getting sick.
Mm-hmm.
But then on Friday at noonish, I start feeling great. It's time to get another job.
Well, yeah. Yep.
So I guess I listen to my body and my feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the same way. I used to, it's not like I left a lot of jobs, but I have. And I remember actually as young as, I might have just started college, but I used to work at Six Flags, and I loved working at Six Flags. But there came a time when I didn't like it anymore, and it was kind of really clear all of a sudden, because I would start getting physical pains on the way to work, and I was like, "Wow, I guess it's time to let this go." It hasn't been that clear since I've gotten a little bit older, but you know, I've been telling y'all, you know, that one of the things that I've just done recently, today was my last day. Job that doesn't serve me anymore. It was the right thing to do at the time that I did it. And I've kind of been sitting in it too long, actually, mm-hmm. kind of using it as a crutch for what seems like good reasons, logically speaking. Mm-hmm. But it really has been keeping me feeling locked and unable to do other things, because I had so much dislike for it that it took up all my creative energy. So even when I wasn't there, I would either have to spend time decompressing from not being there or dreading going there. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a lot of time when I wasn't actually doing the work, which wasn't hard, but it just didn't serve me. And so it became too painful. And then finally, I was just like, you know what? I got a lot going on right now, and it's just not a good idea to continue something that I know doesn't serve me, even though, you know, it's not like I have, you know, a lot of other things that I'm about to go run and do, but I just couldn't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. I think it was going to be detrimental to my mental health if I continued. So, you know, and I was going to continue to, you know, I kind of had talked myself into being there as long as I was anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's like, the more time passed, the more I was kind of reliant, like, well, let me, you know, it's just a couple more months, or it's just another week, or it's just another semester, or I'll stop at this point. And I kept prolonging it, even though I didn't like it.
Right.
So anyway, I've been blogging about it a little bit, talking about freedom, and I never said exactly what it was, but that's what it is that I worked my last day with this organization, and I wish them all well. And it was a really great company and set of companies, actually, because we got acquired by someone. But it's just not for me. So
do you think that not having anything to immediately jump into may have sort of, been a weight on you to stay in that longer?
Yeah, it definitely was. Mm-hmm. I mean, because the thing is, you know, interestingly, I do a lot of part-time stuff. I am a consultant and a part-time professor and all these sorts of things. So I'm always doing a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And, you know, part of me likes the stability of a regular set amount of this, you know, money or whatever. And so that was part of my reason for staying, because I was like, well, let me just keep looking and I'll find something that'll replace it. And then I can just do whatever the thing is that I find full time. And, you know, ultimately it's not what I wanted. And like that article that I brought up, you know, how do you, you know, is it too late to be who you said you really wanted to be? I mean, that's a theme that I've been playing with for a long time, actually. And it just kind of, like I say, it just came to a head right now. But it's interesting that I'm very clear that it was a wait to stay because of finances. Mm-hmm. You know, like it was no joy. Like there was no joy in Mudville. I mean, you know, and it was, the only reason was the money. And so it's not to say that, you know, I'm not going to be destitute. So I'm not trying to tell everybody to go out and if you don't like your job, just quit. There's nothing. I mean, I don't have that kind of situation, but it made it harder to leave knowing that I needed the money, but it made it harder to stay knowing that was the only reason I was there.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the tug of war got to be too much. So,
okay, I'm about to say something that may be controversial.
Okay.
The smarter people are, at least it seems to me in my observation of my 40 years, the less fulfilled they are with jobs long term. I don't know, just like the most, I say you're intelligent. But the most and the most intelligent people I know don't get this thing that maybe other people can sit in with the job. Intelligent people don't seem to be able to do that very well. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I've had enough. And I don't know if it's there are other things I like to do, or I have mastered this, or I don't know what it is. I can't put it into words, but I know a good number of people in that very same predicament. I mean, people who've gone to fancy law schools and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, I've had enough of this.
Mm-hmm.
What else would I like to do now? What else can I do?
The next thing. Yeah. Right.
And people look at them like, what's wrong with you? You know, if I, you know, my job was so easy and they paid me a decent amount, blah. But for, you know, intellectually curious people and creative people,
mm-hmm.
You know, being able to do something easily and see hours of your day waste away on what you know is bullshit.
Yes, yes.
Becomes unsettling.
I mean, that's it in a nutshell, is that I have all these things that regardless of any self-sabotage might be the reason why I still haven't done some of the things I wanted to do. It's like, but I'm giving away the best hours of my day when I'm wide awake, you know, I'm sitting in traffic for literally 2 hours in one direction. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why I had to leave at 6:30 to be somewhere by 8:30,
mm-hmm.
You know, and then I still have to drive back. And then when I'm there, I'm doing something that I'm just like, you know, because of structural aspects, I just can't ever really feel like I'm being effective, or it's just not rewarding, or whatever it is. It's not hard to do. It's not fun to do. It's not, I mean, there's no upside. It's not satisfying my curiosity, my creativity, none of those things. And so, yeah. Mm-mm, mm-mm.
Oh yeah, I don't know if you may have seen my LinkedIn profile, but yeah, I don't I, I at my old job, and granted I was there for 5 years, but at my old job I was told it would take some ridiculous amount of time, 9 months to a year, whatever, to learn the material. Well, didn't take me that long.
Right.
And I was also told it was such a hard job and it was so la 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 la. And I just put systems in place to automate the mundane. And what
Right.
got me at that job was convenience. It was up the street. I
Right.
only went in, 2, 3 days a week. It was pure convenience. But I do know if I had to go there every day for those years, somebody would have died. And I don't know if it would be me or somebody at that company. I mean, they were nice people, generally speaking,
Right.
but they, I could see some of them being Twitter trolls.
What?
One of the guys in my department, his Facebook profile, he's holding a trophy fish.
Oh goodness.
And we know that those are usually the biggest racists.
Sometimes they sometimes it works out that
Yeah, so it's and it after I had been there that long. And other people had been there maybe a year less than me on the team. Well, there was one girl who had been there for years,
way.
but they still found the job difficult. And I'm like, I don't understand what's so hard about this. All you're doing is you essentially a glorified sales clerk. I mean, the software is there. You, it's not a hard sell. It's like, selling crack to a crackhead. That ain't a hard sell. They need this. We got this.
Right.
So. So I certainly understand, but one of the issues that I've had is that, I have to, keep some type of steady income. And I even when I was at the old job, I would go on these interviews, and my thing was, I'm not trying to jump from one bad situation to a worse situation just because I'm trying to get out of this situation.
Right.
And that's exactly where I am now. Like some days I think, gosh, do they know they're paying me to do this? Like, I feel like it only needs to be two of us and they're eight. I feel
Right.
like the stuff I'm telling people is pretty self-explanatory. And but I don't want to leave this situation and go to a worse situation. So
It's interesting though. One of my good friends who works for a really prestigious government agency and has for a long time, he's kind of in the same place. He's just like I'm looking to make some moves. I want to do something totally different. I want to be more creative. I'd like to make music and I want to have more time to do that. And I like to travel. I want to have more time to do that. And he likes to help people. So he wants to do humanitarian technology, which is
Oh, cool.
perfect for it. It's as soon as he said it, I'm like, I can definitely see you doing that. And he's done versions of that, just kind of on his own. But it's like if he were to tell people who don't know him, hey, this is where I work right now, and I really want to leave them, people would be like, whoa, 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 time out. Wait, where do you work? You want to do what? But it's just like, at some point, I mean, some of the younger people, Sojo would probably, chime in right now and tell us about the millennials who are able to do it starting from, a younger age. And I just think that the rest of us, here we are at this age range, and we're like, well, let's just take some time to reflect. Am I really living the life I want? And if not, what can I do to get there? I don't know if I told y'all, I think I did tell y'all already about what is the next right move from Oprah, but it's kind of like, even if you can't make a big shift, if you know, however the knowing comes, that it's time to make that move, what is the thing that you can do that will at least alter your trajectory a little bit? This is something I think, I
Child.
want everyone to think about. What is the next small thing you can do to get you closer to the path that you want to be walking?
I wish I had an answer. No, seriously, I mean, I really do because, I've like interviewed and stuff, and even through my responses in WhatsApp, y'all will know whether or not I'm actually interested in a job or not. So honestly, I'm really at a loss because for me, I don't think it's a profession or anything that is necessarily something that obviously makes money. Like, you know, I'm crafty and I like writing and I like creating things. So if I could figure out a way to be financially set and paint all day,
right?
You know, I don't know, like come up with black ass baby shower gifts all day. Like I mean, that's when I'm at my most calm, most blissful. When I'm creating.
Right.
So I don't know how, because honestly, right now, I mean, I was able to do a bit of it at my old job, but right now, with at least an hour each way commute, when I get home, right now it's all I can do to sit up in this bed.
Right. Listen. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's a downer. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, I don't want anybody under the impression, of course we're grateful for work, but you still got to be true to your spirit.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
I don't know. I do think about, I mean, I think that this is why some of the guests, I have a couple of guests in mind that I really want us to bring on. And one of them is the tweeter behind My Creative Connection. And she uses the hashtag Black Creatives or BLK Creatives a lot. And there's somebody else. There's a couple of other people that I just think would be good for us to have on and talk about entrepreneurship and freelancing and alternative ways to create a living, you know, also formerly known as the side hustle, you know, but just ways that you can start to do that. And tap into the resources that already exist. I want to kind of mine their brains a little bit. So hopefully we can have them on soon.
Yeah, because I need some guidance, because what I found is there are lots of corporate mentors, but finding someone in the headspace to serve as a mentor for this type of thing is somewhat difficult to do.
Well, and I think actually, if I might be wrong about this, but I think that that's one of the things that they're trying to figure out right now is or talking about right now is mentorship. And actually, Rich, isn't that what he just sent out to his listeners over at Two Guys, One Show?
I didn't see it,
but I thought they were talking about mentorship as well. So that might be a good, you might need to pick his brain on that too.
Yeah, I mean, it is something that I don't think we talk enough about specifically in our community. I always feel like, you know, if I lived during the Harlem Renaissance, you know, that would have been maybe a better place for me.
Me too.
You know, just not only for my own creative spirit, but just absorbing what was around me. And then in today's time, though, if you start talking about this stuff to a certain type of person, whether you're a millennial, whether you're our age or whatever, they're like, oh, you're just lazy, or you're just this, or you're just that. When the reality of it is that everybody isn't the same. So maybe you're okay going to your 9-to-5. Maybe you're okay with your whole life goal being getting to the corner office. I don't care. And the thing is, like, I know right now at work, you know, I'm with a new group of people, and early on they realized Miss Smart don't care about these things. Like, she's going to do her job. She's going to do it in an excellent fashion. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to arguing about minutia, I mean, I'm just not that invested in small stuff and stuff that is not feeding my spirit.
Exactly. Yep.
So. Yep. It's tough. And, you know, and then if you are intelligent, people don't understand why you won't use your intelligence to further their goals. You know what I mean? Like, I remember, like, you know, you may work with somebody, like there's somebody on our team who has a PhD from Harvard. Mm-hmm. And to me, I feel like he might not be in the best place for him. I'm sure they pay him a shitload of money. But I feel like his talents are such that they're so outside of the realm of the work he's doing, at least when we work together. And I couldn't do it. You know, I don't know. I've been drinking.
Well, and some people, and that's a, I guess the flip side is some people purposely choose jobs that they find that aren't taxing, you know, or, you know, don't require a lot of their energy so that they can reserve it for the side hustle. But for me, like the job I was doing didn't require a lot of energy, but it didn't require a lot of energy output from me, but it was still draining. Mm-hmm. It still, you know, it was an energy vampire.
Right. It's not so. Like you woke up like, I can't wait to do this thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But how often have you felt that way? That, you know, you wake up, can't wait. And is that sustained in a job situation?
You know, I really liked the job that I had several years ago. Actually, when I was a classroom teacher, mm-hmm. I woke up and went to sleep and worked a lot of hours. And I really was always happy, you know, for years. And in fact, once I started to feel that sense of dread, that's how I knew it was time for me to shift out of that. Mm-hmm. And actually, I really don't even think that it was teaching that I needed to leave. Number one, I had a period of grief because that's when my mother passed away. Mm-hmm. And then I also had a new, some things changed in our work environment. And I just felt like it wasn't the best place for me at that time. So I think that if things had been different and I had taken a year off or had, you know, shifted gears just for a year and then come back to a classroom, but in a different school, I think I still would have, you know, been able to really love what I was doing for a while longer. But, mm-hmm. you know, all the circumstances weren't right. So I started shifting gears. But, you know, it's interesting that you asked that, though, because, you know, there's a book, Flow, by Csikszentmihalyi, that was popular a long time ago, but it really talks about how you get into the flow state, you know, this right combination of challenge and enjoyment, and how when you're in that flow state, you, you know, you're not aware of the passage of time because you're so into what you're doing. So they attribute this a lot, this flow state, to gaming, but it's true of anything that you find that's at that right level of, it's not too easy, it's not too hard, it's just right, but you like it. So for me, I get into that flow state when I'm writing. And it's interesting that I realized lately, you know, I have to spend a great deal of time in front of my computer because I also teach like 3 online classes. But, you know, I had a little resistance about that at different points, but I had to pay attention when I'm comparing myself and this energy drain and the traffic and the, oh, I don't like going to this other gig. But then I'm sitting here, you know, the last couple of days, you know, getting ready and grading papers, giving feedback and setting up for my online class. And I don't feel dread about it. And the time is passing and, whoa, I've been doing this for 7 hours straight. And I didn't even realize, you know, I had to kind of look at myself again and say, okay, well, maybe I like this a little bit more than I thought. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I think it's just kind of trying a few things and seeing what resonates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And but as I say all the time, you have the luxury of having the option to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really wish that people, that we allowed our young people to do that.
Yeah.
More often than not, as well as, you know, allowing people to reevaluate that. Like someone recently asked me, I don't know what he said, 3 years or 5 years, where did I see myself then? And I said, well, I only consider a year at a time because I may think I like, because there was a time when I thought I'd like to be an accountant. And mm-hmm. then I took accounting.
Really?
And
wait, yes. I'd like to be an accountant. mm-hmm.
And then I took accounting and it just wasn't for me. Like I didn't care.
Right. Oh, that's my favorite phrase right there. That's how yeah. I know.
Yeah. I didn't care to get up for that early ass class. I didn't care about those numbers. I didn't care about, you know, any of the checks and balances that are involved in accounting. Mm-hmm. I didn't care about any of that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that we, you know, we don't give people that opportunity. And not only that, we encourage people to lock themselves in the situations, not to harp on the not having kids piece. But I told my coworkers today, I said, listen, once you've had nice things, you often, you know, you have to do 6 in one hand, 6 in the other. It's very difficult to consider once you know what it takes to pay for, as far as time, emotion, and energy, children, it's very difficult to go there because you are, I was like, you know, if, you know, I, you know, not to say that under the right circumstances, I wouldn't assist with other, someone else's child, but it's better because this girl, they were, you know, they were all, except for one girl, had children young. And I was like, you know what? That's probably the best time to do it because you don't know no better. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's with everything, but they lock themselves into, you know, being parents and having to consider three other human beings plus significant other in and out the picture. They don't got time to be, oh, what would I like to do today? No, you need to get your ass a job so you can pay for childcare. And we encourage people to get married young and or have children young and get locked into a mortgage really young. And all those things are seen as quote unquote youthful markers of success. But are they really, if you're not happy, if you're not fulfilled, if you're just the hamster in the wheel?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's my deal on that.
Mm-hmm.
Something else.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to the Norman Lear episode of Combat Jack.
Oh, I haven't listened to it yet.
You'll enjoy it. It was really good. And one of the things that struck me, there were several things that struck me, but what I did not ever know, and maybe it is in the book, but he said that Stokely Carmichael and a few other Black Panthers came to his office to talk to him about James and about JJ.
Hmm.
JJ was saying Dynamite too much. He was too much of a caricature.
Hmm.
And James, why did he have to have two or three jobs? Why did he have to not have a job? Why couldn't he be doing better as a Black father on TV? Hmm. Two things I took from that. Scratching and surviving. Good time. Well, when we did get Black people on TV doing better, i.e. The Cosby Show, everybody was pissed about that. Like, oh, Black folks don't live like that, whatever. Mm-hmm. But Norman Lear said that conversation, one, the guys weren't, he didn't feel physically threatened. There was no violence. They had a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And that conversation led to the Jeffersons. Because George was a guy who moved on up. He was a Black guy who moved on up, and mm-hmm. Norman wanted him to be worse or better, I forgot the word Norman used, than Archie Bunker.
Mm-hmm.
And he purposely wanted a guy, a Black man who was small in stature, but big in presence.
Mm.
And I was like, you was a thoughtful MF.
I know.
I didn't know Norman Lear was still with us, quite frankly.
Yeah, I'm looking him up now. He's 93.
And he's still sharp, girl. He's
you got a third wife. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you guys have the time, I didn't finish it because my mom called me because that's what mothers do. And I didn't finish it, but I got to the point where the audience starts to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it was really good. There were lots of gems. It was a very, very good interview. Well, another thing that struck me, and I'm going to tell you this, and I want to see if you catch it when it happens. He says nigger a couple of times, and it didn't even pop up for me.
Hmm.
I was listening, and it didn't, like, if I was at the Wendy's, I would never go to Wendy's because that's disgusting. But if I were at the Wendy's and somebody and a white person said nigger, I would look at them. Like, I mean, I would be aware of it, but in the context of what he was talking about, it flowed. Like, I was like, wait a minute, but he said it again. So it's a really good interview, and I encourage people to listen to it just to see the perspective of how those shows came to be. And that does not in any way negate my belief that Florida Evans is the worst person in the world.
Oh goodness. Oh, like, we're gonna have to unpack that one day.
She didn't want good things for her family. That's what I do know. As long as it didn't come through the white Jesus on the wall,
she knew the
things. What? Okay. Anything else as we sort of start to wind it on down?
I don't have anything new. I did want to give a shout out actually to her Twitter handle is Inda's Corner. And she's someone who gave us a shout out, actually, because she was talking to Nerdgasm Noir and said, hey, if you're still looking for podcasts, you know, I want you to try, you know, these people out. And she included us in a group of podcasts. And one of those podcasts was Screenwriters RR, which stands for Screenwriters Rant Room. And I started listening to it yesterday right after she tweeted us, you know, and all these hours that I had to drive in the car, listen to it today. And you know, I really enjoy it so far. So I've been, you know, tweeting out the show. It's actually two people.
Who, what does the RR stand for again?
Rant Room, okay. Screenwriters Rant Room. And it's a Hilliard Guest podcast, and he podcasts with someone named Lisa. I don't want to mispronounce her last name. Bolekaha, I think. Anyway, they're script writers, screenwriters.
What was their first name again? Sorry.
Uh-oh. Oh, that's a weird staticky. Lisa.
Okay.
Lisa.
Okay.
I just went off of it. But at any rate, so they're interesting to listen to. And sometimes they have someone on named Kevin. And then the episode I'm listening to right now, they have Carlito Machete, who is a writer and producer. And he writes for Empire, actually. And so he's given, it kind of reminds me of a Combat Jack episode, except that, you know, he's talking about his background in hip hop and how that led to him writing for The Source and being editor at The Source and, you know, how he, you know, his whole life story. But it's just interesting. And they spent a lot of this podcast and the previous one really talking about the importance of feeding your art, you know. And so regardless of whatever you're doing as the full-time gig, you know, listen to podcasts in your area or read the blogs in your area, read the books, do the work so that you can keep yourself motivated and still build on your craft, whatever that is. So you can apply that to whatever your, you know, your long lost love, your deep, your deep secret thing that you really want to do, you know, just keep feeding it, you mm-hmm. know, to the degree that you can. Yep. So anyway, this is a podcast that's been doing that for me, just a couple of episodes that I heard. So I just wanted to give them a shout out, and then also Inda for shouting us out, but indirectly turning me on to them. So, yep.
Excellent.
Excellent.
If you've listened this far, go ahead and give us a five-star review and or share the podcast with your friends and family. Go ahead and like our Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter. We are at Whiskey Wine Moon. I am specifically Miss Smart at I'm at think_P_smart guy. This whole thing is falling apart. I don't have a cheers. I'm going to give my cheers to that classroom of students in South Carolina, because I know that this is not just an incident that will go away for them. You know, so I'm hoping that they and their parents or their guardians seek some type of mental and emotional support for them, and that mm-hmm. their teachers do not penalize them for bringing a spotlight to the school. So that's not really a cheers, I guess. Anyway.
So cheers and a well wishes. I don't have any other cheers, but I will just say, you know, you can reach me on Twitter at NDCHARP. That's NDC Harp, like the instrument. And you can check me out on my blog. I've been back at it, and I'm at CocoStudio.com. That's COCO Studio, singular, CocoStudio.com.
Yep. Excellent. And in her absence, I'll say that Sojo can be reached at Sojo XOXO. Mm-hmm. She also has a blog, and I don't know the address.
It's sojoxo.me.
Yes, that is it. Let me think. I'm trying to think. I feel like we're missing something. Yeah, give us five-star reviews, send your comments, and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, enjoy the full moon. It's a full moon right now, so. That means the fruition of something that you started a few weeks ago at the new moon. So hopefully people are seeing all their hard work come into being. And if not, you always got the next moon cycle to try again.
All right. Well, well, gentlemen, or at least lady on this podcast with me, cheers.
Cheers.